The Why Golf podcast is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels, and cars so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Hello and welcome to Why Golf, presented by Skyscanner. Firstly, a massive thank you to Henny, who went over to the Netherlands for the first episode talking all things Solheim Cup. We are back here now at Wentworth, and I'm about to speak to a very special lady. In 2009, the Kate and Justin Rose Foundation was established. It's raised millions for charity and continues to do so. And then, off the back of that, the Rose Ladies series. I can't wait to talk about all her charitable work and everything that she does. Let's go meet her. Thank you first for my cup of tea.
Very welcome.
Can you get that? Yeah. This is a lovely... Do you know, it's always nice when someone else makes you a cup of tea.
Always.
Yeah, because mine's a bit rubbish.
The Rose household has many teas a day, unfortunately.
How many cups?
Oh, I don't know. Who's count? Justin's pretty... Yeah.
Is he tea or coffee?
Seven. He's both now.
Oh, right. Yeah. Any caffeine?
We're getting older. He is obsessed with coffee in the mornings.
So do you have like a proper machine?
He does.
Oh, right. It was invested in.
Yes, and I don't use it and I don't want to know how to use it. Oh, it seems very complicated. It's very specific. Mm. And it's just you have that... he's got that brain to analyse everything and it...
Yeah. You kind of need a degree to set it up to start with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then don't touch it. This is mine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kate, really good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Have you been to the gym this morning? What have you been doing?
Not today, no.
No? Do you go often?
I try. Yeah. I try as much as you can amongst children and meetings and all the rest of it. So, yeah.
Good.
Trying to keep up with the husband. As fit as a fiddle and, yeah, takes it
trains a lot. And also, I know you're a keen paddle player as well.
Was.
Right.
Would like to still
you
be.
You are really good.
It's just time, isn't it?
But yeah.
I think of myself as liking paddle and I just actually haven't played in about 6 months, although we are playing on Monday night.
We are playing. Yes, we are. So, but it doesn't matter. It's all about having a giggle and then we can have a drink afterwards, can't we? Now, golf and yourself. You've been part of golf for so many years now because you originally worked for IMG, I believe, many years ago.
I did. That was the start of it. And funny enough, in my interview at IMG, it was a kind of casual chat with the head of HR because she was looking for someone with languages and sporty background. And so I just had a generalised chat and I said, oh, great company, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
Love to do anything except for cricket or golf. So that was my interview.
Oh, gosh.
And then 3 weeks later, got a call. I know you said, but I just really quickly need someone. And then I promise I'll move you sideways. Yeah. And then 20-something years later,
oh my gosh,
yeah, I'm still a golf.
Oh,
I
wow.
like it now.
Yes.
I didn't used to, but I have developed
a love
appreciation.
Appreciation.
And love
okay. Do you play at all?
Please don't ask me that. I feel like the biggest faker. No,
because
I talk
a
lot about how people should play, and then I don't.
But you are a sportswoman. You used to compete in gymnastics.
Yeah.
I know you can still walk across the room on your hands, and you like to do a handstand competition. But in terms of golf, I reckon you can smack it a far way.
Yeah, I don't mind smacking a bit, but I'm not. I don't have the time. I don't prioritise the time. Everyone can say they don't have time. It's whether you want to. I would like to start playing now the kids are playing and I don't want to be left out of the four balls as they get older and it's a lovely thing to do as a family. There's so many good reasons to do it. I just haven't really
got around to it yet. A lot on your plate, which is what I want to come to. But in terms of you and Justin, you guys met how many years ago now? How many years have you been married?
20 years next year, married.
Oh, good. I don't know what that is. Is that like some gold or...
Oh, I don't know, but I'll look into it beforehand.
Don't
worry.
Does anyone know what 20 years of
marriage
is?
Please give Justin lots of tips about what...
Yeah, what to buy you. That's a long innings.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. 5 years dating before that, a couple of years knowing each other before that, so whatever.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
One of the big moments this year, I mean, my goodness, we're all crying. It was amazing. It was so wonderful. It was the Masters and that 66 on the final day.
Yeah.
Where were you watching it, the last round?
Well, I was walking around.
You were okay.
Yeah.
You normally do.
I was walking around, and then what's always really fun is in a playoff. There's nowhere for you to stand except right next to the wife of your competitor, which is hilarious. It's the same when Sergio won as well. I was right there, but you know we're all friends, so
a lot of chat. with
I mean, you do
Erica.
Have a bit of chat, but you've also got a big fat camera right there. Yeah. And you're like, yeah. Ooh, this isn't awkward at all. And you're kind of sort of trying to talk, you know, without...
Yes, without... That must be so weird, so strange.
It's all, but the whole thing's a bit surreal
so
anyway
surreal.
When you're in that moment. So it's
so,
one of the many
do you ever feel
moments.
Like it is like an out-of-body experience? Sort of like, oh, this is a bit like a movie right now.
Not anymore. Maybe not really. I think I'm actually really calm under pressure. I think I go the other way. I go really calm.
Interesting, really?
I don't know why.
That's a superpower.
But also I think there's so many times in golf where you're so close and it can be really exciting and it's not. So I've kind of...
Yeah.
You're
but
I've
always
been I don't want to say I'm used to it. But right from the beginning, I always had a self-inflicted rule of I'm not going to get excited or depressed. Unless it's the last three holes on a Friday to make the cut or the last three holes on a Sunday to win. Other than that, you will find me just
kind of
totally.
If your heartbeat was taken,
it'd be
it wouldn't
totally
be
totally normal. Yeah, I'll be chatting. I'll be doing. I try not to get so totally emotionally involved. I mean, they're all doing this, and then they come off. They don't need a wife who's done the whole this, roller coaster. Like,
no,
God, I'm exhausted.
But you could literally, you could sell that strength because a lot of people can't do that. It's sort of like, oh, I can't watch.
I think it's self-protection probably more than anything else.
Yeah,
I
hear you. Does Amy, Justin's mum, watch? Or, you know, because some parents can't, can they?
It drives her mad, actually, that I'm so
really
calm. It really annoys
her.
There's been a few times at the Masters, in fact, where he's sort of in contention and she's like... And I'm, you know, really calm. And she's like, what is wrong with you? Come on. And
wow.
I'm like, well, you've got another five holes to go.
You're just so practical.
So practical. It's so boring.
But you never know what Augusta's going to throw your way.
Exactly.
But just seriously proud day. My gosh. I mean, it was so, so big. I mean, and it's gone global. And it's huge news. How did he feel? What are his sort of emotions afterwards?
I think, actually, with this one, I feel like he was quite upbeat about it. Obviously gutted not to win. But I feel like I was quite bullish even in the moment of there's nothing to be disappointed about. We did. 100%. Would you have taken this at the beginning of the week? Would you have taken it at the beginning of today? This has been a great day. In a way, like, he had such a brilliant part on 18 to force the playoff. If only in a way it could have finished there, we'd have all been, you know, you'd have been on such a high. But then because it's a playoff and then you didn't win, then it's like, oh, I've...
Yeah.
So it's, you have to be a little bit, not fall into that trap, I think, of feeling really disappointed. Because, yes, it's so much work to get yourself in contention on the back nine. It doesn't come around every day. Yes, is there ever going to be another opportunity? You never know. No one ever knows. So you can sort of feel a bit like, oh... But at the same time, that is what you're out there for. You've got to enjoy the pressure. Otherwise, what? I mean, there's so many downsides. If you don't enjoy the upside of the pressure, then you're really in the wrong job. And I think it was just very different. You know, he didn't lose anything. Rory won it. I mean, they both played extraordinarily well on the playoff. You kind of just have to go hats off.
Amazing.
Absolutely. And then the bigger picture of what it meant to Rory with the Grand Slam was, you know, just more historic kind of depth to it that you, as gutting as it is for you, you just can't help but be really chuffed for someone else.
Well, Ryder Cup team, I mean, you've known Rory for so many years now, 20, 30 years. So it's a mate, isn't it, really?
Yeah, totally.
Winning a major and a Grand Slam. But yeah, as you say, there shouldn't really be any disappointment because the achievement level is just off the scale.
But they are competitors, so there's always going to be that little slight disappointment. But
so great that you walked around and the fact that your heartbeat stays the same. I need to learn from you. Let's do some meditation together, seriously. Because mine over the last couple of days, I've just been in Royal Port Rush playing the golf course, and I think I was having a cardiac arrest trying to figure out the artiches. It was amazing. But in terms of your career, I mean, you've done so much, and you wear so many different hats, doing so many different things. But I want to go to the Kate and Justin Rose Foundation, which you established in 2009, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
Charity work, you're doing so much of it. You've raised millions over the years. How have you done it? What's your secret? How exhausting is it? And do you stay sane doing it?
Oh, good questions. I don't know if I'm ever sane, but yes, I enjoy it. So I think therefore it doesn't really feel like work. Sometimes it can be arduous if things... You know, there's been a project or two that's been, you know, feels tough. A bit like pushing water uphill. But generally, it's so much fun, and it's so connecting, and I'm so privileged to be in a position to have time to be able to give back. I think probably a lot more people would do more, but everyone's just busy with their own lives.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you've got kids, you've got Justin, you're looking after all those guys. And then, but this, the foundation back in 2009, we're all super impressed with Blessings in a Backpack. Could you just explain to everyone what that is?
It's
feeding kids.
Super easy. Does exactly what it says it's going to do on the tin. So in America, the federally free and partially funded food program, where kids get fed at school, essentially, which hopefully is what's happening in this country. I saw this morning £1 billion announced by the government to help towards feeding kids.
Yeah.
Blessings in Backpack, and we have a chapter in Orlando. The kids who are on that program, it's literally giving them a backpack of food on a Friday. They take it home, so they have food over the weekends. So it's pretty simple. Very sad that it's needed. Unfortunately, it's very, very much needed. We have, since we started it in Florida, I think provided nearly 1.7 million hunger-free weekends to kids. So it's been a really big passion of ours. And it kind of... I got involved with the PJ Tour Wives Association. I was running their charity outings and worked with lots of different charities around America. So it was super interesting.
So when you say you were running their charity, I mean, that's not a small job, is it?
No, but that was... when I gave up my job in England to go and travel with Justin as a girlfriend. I love that you mentioned my career earlier, which I've had my whole life just feeling like I don't have a career. I've followed my boyfriend to America.
No, you've got a huge career though.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I just always wanted to kind of stay busy and productive, and I was obviously still kind of helping manage Justin and always have done, but at the same time, really love the philanthropic side and got really involved in lots of different charities. And the more you do, the more you can see, the more ideas you have. And then Blessings in a Backpack was one that just really spoke to us. And when we had kids, we had both of our children in Orlando. So we've always wanted to give
great
back
names,
to the community.
Leo and Lottie.
Oh, thank you.
Brilliant. Leo and Lottie, yeah.
And so, you know, when you have young kids and you can see the impact of food or not having food or having the wrong food or not enough or at the wrong time, you know, that's huge, isn't it? So
massive.
When we had children and I was working with Blessings in Backpack across the country and actually served on the national board for 8 years.
Served on the national board for 8 years.
Which was so interesting logistically. It's a massive country.
Another string to your boat. Yeah, but that's big.
So then we wanted to do our own thing because we thought, you know, it's all very well. You can have the best teachers, you can have the best everything, but if you haven't got food in your stomach, no kid's going to learn. You just can't. So it's sort of one of the very first building blocks, absolutely essential.
Yeah.
So
it is. I was just thinking about this morning, actually. My daughter, she was like, oh, I'm not hungry. Mm. And I'm thinking, well, you're not going to be able to concentrate at school unless you have your breakfast. And it's almost like a little bit of a battle in the morning. But I always say to her, do you feel better when you've had a bit of food and go in and
monsters,
can you concentrate?
Otherwise. Sometimes they're monsters.
Completely. Yeah. But I think, feeding kids for that many weekends. And it's still going.
Still going. Yeah.
So you have a base over there.
So that's what our chapter does over there in Florida. And when we moved back to England and we wanted to obviously set up our charity over here, rather than continuing the feeding model, we felt very much that Justin's learned his golf here. Our whole life is credited to golf. Everything we have, we need to give back in the golf space, really. And also felt hopefully maybe he can have more bang for the buck using him and his platform within the golf space in England rather than doing something different. So over here, we'd already kind of established our sort of slight pathway between the juniors, the this is a mouthful and we always get
go
it wrong.
It. It's hard.
Daily Telegraph Justin Rose Junior Open Championships. Oh, I can't do it. He can't do it.
It's a long title.
It's not the
it's
best.
It's a bit like the
best name, is it?
Shriners Children's Hospital's Open PGA Tour event.
I think
it might be in the wrong order.
Who's checking?
Yeah.
So we've got the Junior Series, which I think is the biggest junior series in the world. And then and then we started the Rose Lady Series because of COVID, which is one day series, which is the biggest one day event purse for women in the country. And then we have the Rose Ladies Open, which is on the Access Tour, which is just underneath the Ladies European Tour. And that is also the biggest purse on the Access Tour, which I'm really proud about because what we're really trying to push is for more parity, but obviously takes a while. But say, for example, in the Access Tour, I think the somebody else came along and announced that they had the biggest purse. And I was like, great. We gave them the week. And then we went, announce our purses increase.
Here we go.
Not that we're competitive. No. But that's the whole point is not just to go, okay, well, everyone's just kind of, you know, upping the game. It's like, okay, great. You're coming up to here. Let's keep pushing.
So you have to.
So we've got that whole pathway.
That's
incredible. So then the natural thing for our charity was to be in the golf space. And what I feel really passionately about is, A, obviously trying to give access to more children who don't have access to golf, golf clubs, golf swings, you know, the game of golf, but also B, people with disabilities to be able to play and have, some more opportunities there. So we've got some pilot schemes running now.
We touched on this at the golf day last year.
So we raised
Kate
money there,
and
we've got
Rose
the pilot
Foundation golf day down the road.
So we've got our big fundraiser, which we do with our really good friend Niall Horan every other year, which is a big gala dinner. So that's this October, and then in the mid years we're doing our own golf day. So
got you.
So we sort
got
of have
you.
Money coming in.
I mean, you raise a lot of money at the Niall Horan Justin Rose golf day, don't you? Yeah. Or I should say Justin Rose Niall
Horan and Rose
day.
Horan and Rose gala.
It's a gala, and it's those two over there.
Yeah.
Over a million, did you say?
I think last time it was about 800,000.
It's
tricky,
isn't it, for a day?
Raising funds.
But you say, tricky raising funds. I don't know how you keep doing it, though. I mean, time and time again.
We have amazing supporters, and I think we obviously have a great platform, so we're very advantaged in that sense.
But you're the instigator. I mean, this office, you said you basically live in.
Yeah.
And I actually remember a few years ago when it was the start of the Rose Ladies series, and you just said, I'm just emailing clubs at the moment and I'm having phone calls about where we can have the events. It's not straightforward. A lot of people think, oh yes, they can just put it on there or put it on there, but to actually get an event at a location
for free
takes a lot of work. It does, though, doesn't it? The amount of work that you have to do and the networking and all the meetings that you have to have.
We have
a full-time job.
We have a great team, so I can't take, you know, all the credit. We really have
a good
team.
I want you to take some credit.
I have the ideas. I think they get nervous when I have a day off because there's more ideas incoming.
Right,
and they're like,
okay.
Oh, God, what? But I have a really great team now with Rose Golf. So
brilliant.
They help put it all together, tournament director, you know, help find other sponsors, so it's not just all on us.
It's been so
successful. Great partnerships. Yeah,
you have got great partnerships. I've seen that. But I mean, you've had Charlie Hull win it.
Yep.
You've had Georgia Hall win.
Yeah, totally.
Just great pedigree. And this year you've had five events, £10,000 for each, for the winner.
Each
of the one-day events.
Yeah.
What's the response been from all the players?
Well, the response is brilliant, and that's why it's still going, because it really wasn't intended to be.
It was just going to be during COVID, wasn't it?
It was just a stopgap.
Yeah.
So it went from a stopgap to, okay, COVID's still kind of ongoing, we'll do another year, and then the women are brilliant to work with. I mean, they are lovely. They are so fun and so supportive of each other and so grateful. And it seems like there was a hole to be filled, to be honest.
Yeah.
So then we've kind of continued.
Well, they didn't have anywhere to play.
At the time, no, there was no golf. So we had COVID. Justin was home for 3 months, I think, which was delightful in many ways because it's the longest he's been in one place since he was about 14, I think. So it was lovely, and it's amazing when you realize how non-calm your life is always with with the kid. He's coming, he's going, we're adjusting him. There was none of that, and it was just really peaceful and lovely.
Did you go on your walks every day together?
We did our walks. We did a Saturday night themed dinner. So we've got
some
fun photos.
Can you give us one of your themed dinners?
It popped up actually the other day. There was a under the sea theme.
Oh, great.
I think we had 80s rock bands.
Did you back comb your hair?
Oh no, total dress up.
I know you have time. Fancy dress. I'm going to spend 4 days getting ready for our Saturday night.
It's
just the four of us. Special guest,
me.
This episode of Why Golf is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels, and rental cars, so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Now, I end up travelling around the world quite a bit for golf, whether that's leisure to play at that special course or when I'm working, but travel planning can feel overwhelming and pretty stressful. There are so many options for flights, hotels, and cars. Which one is best for me? What is a great deal? Am I missing out on a great option? Right, okay, breathe. This is where Skyscanner comes in, making everything simple and easy. Skyscanner has been helping travellers for over 20 years, and because they are fellow travellers, they never pressure you to book or manipulate prices. And tools like Explore Everywhere or the new Savvy Search AI feature help you explore and find that perfect trip when you don't know where you want to go. I used them recently when I was looking to book a trip to Germany and was amazed with how quick and easy it was. I went to skyscanner.net, searched for my dates and airports, and found exactly what I was looking for with times and prices. And it was also easy to add hotel and car options to my trip too. So when you're booking your next adventure, whether that be to Augusta or Abu Dhabi, St Andrews or Spain, just head to skyscanner.net or download the Skyscanner app to start building your next dream trip away. Amazing deals for flights, hotels and car hire all in one place with one simple search. Skyscanner, proud partner of the Why Golf podcast.
How did you find it actually? Because obviously Justin's away a lot, so you had him for that amount of time,
which is lovely.
Oh, lovely. Brilliant.
Yeah, really nice. So it kind of all started, and then he went back on tour.
Mm.
Great, PJ Tour, back up and running. Okay, they didn't have crowds, a few little amends, but he essentially went back to work.
Yeah.
And then we looked around and saw that the women weren't going back to work, and, you know, who's going to agree that that's right?
I remember.
Someone has to do something. So, and I, again, it was a bit of that sort of, we've got the platform. I rang Liz Young, who'd written about it in the paper, which is how we'd learned about it. And sort of said, oh, you know, what do you need? What do you need? Let's do it. Shall we do this? What about if we do this? Don't want to step on toes. What do you think? And so she's like, crack on. And I went, all right, yeah, great. Let's crack on.
Yeah, totally.
Still cracking on.
You are. 1 year you went up to 11 events.
Yeah, I think it was probably the first or the second year, yeah.
Yeah, that was where
they had nothing to
desperately
play.
Need.
And, like, there was a couple of reasons behind it. Number one, from Justin's point of view, as a professional athlete, it's not like you're going back to work after COVID and turning on the computer. You got to get rid of a bit of the rust. You got to keep being competitive, have a scorecard in your hand. So it was really preparing them for when their proper events came back online. so from a performance perspective, that was really important. From another PR perspective, it was some of them have sponsors. Sponsors are getting nothing out of them because they're sat at home not competing.
Like, that's,
are they going to lose the sponsors? They're now not earning money on the golf course. And if you start losing your business supporters, then so it was a chance for them to be on Sky and to be covered by the Times and have some coverage for their sponsors. And another aspect was kind of the communication of trying to get them known about. If you don't see it on TV, or if they're not out there, how
can
kids...
You need exposure,
don't you? Yeah, they don't get the exposure, so therefore there's not that demand to see them, and therefore they're not covered, and then it just, you're never going to get the prize funds to kind of pick up again. So those are sort of the motivations
Amazing.
Behind it.
And where do you see the future of the Rose Ladies series? Where do you see it going? I mean, you're going to do the same next year?
Yep. So it's continuing. Same with Rose Ladies Open. So that's exciting.
Oh, great. So you've got a new venue, have
got
you?
A new venue.
Yeah. Ooh, can you tell us where it is?
I won't.
Okay, fine. Okay.
So that's exciting. So that's great. The next stage. And then the foundation's really the sort of the focus for me. We've had some... lots of pilot schemes, you know, because you kind of got to figure out what's the right thing to do.
And what is a pilot scheme then?
So just small. We're working with a deaf school, introducing them to golf. We're working with other schools in other aspects. We'll launch it, obviously, but we're really excited about a bus and, you know, with the gamified kind of golf.
Playing golf on the bus.
That you can take to schools. Because obviously logistics is quite tricky to get kids from inner city out to a golf course. But just to start them off maybe with a club in their hands, gaming. Not plastic clubs like often happens, but like really getting to whack the ball. And if that's a pathway for some that they might then want to take it further, then hopefully we'll be able to facilitate that. And for others, it might not be. For me, the thing that really kind of calls to me is the disabilities, and we've got this amazing prosthetics company which can actually then, you know, allow some children who don't have all their limbs to be able to still play and just but apart from a physical disability,
brilliant.
You know, look at kids with autism, kids all over. It kills me to think of kids sitting at home feeling that they don't have a sport that they can identify with or participate in. And
it's a bit, it's sort of, they don't belong possibly. Yeah. They may feel they don't belong to
a
sport like golf.
Right? Yeah. So golf can be a really lovely, supportive community. And if you can help just shift someone's aspect of, okay, I might have a disability, but actually not that. I am a golfer. I belong to this club.
Yeah.
This is my sport. This is how I'm playing. It's this, I'm not sitting in my room isolated.
Mm.
That kind of, it makes me feel very emotional.
Yeah, no, bless you. No, I totally get that. And I love the fact, obviously, I work in golf, and obviously trying to get more women and juniors into golf.
Mm.
Oh, gosh, it has touched you. But I always say to women, if you've hit a golf shot, or to children, you are a golfer.
Mm.
Don't feel excluded that you have to go and play 18 holes.
Yes, definitely.
Or you feel like, oh gosh, I've made a 12 on the first. I'm not a golfer. You are a golfer because you're striking a golf ball.
Yeah, and I think that is a really important message because from what I have seen over the years, it holds women particularly back, probably children too, but...
I can't play. I'm rubbish. I can't play.
Look at all the golf days. Look at all the golf days. How many women are showing up? I'm always looking. How many women do we have? How many women? You know, it's not enough.
Story of our lives.
But B, it's also because as long as you can get out there and play, put yourself out there, because if you're not out there, you're not having the conversations, you're not making the connections, you know, the business deals are going on without you. It's a really important life skill. Like, here I am doing it again, talking all about how great golf is. I'm still not playing, but...
But you're heavily involved in golf and the organisation.
It is literally a life skill. And I don't think you should have to feel that you're, you know, brilliant or this handicap or any. It really just... Yeah. As long as you can play without slowing everyone down or totally embarrassing yourself that you're mortified and you can't enjoy it, just get out there, just kind of... Just have a go, because just being part of it, it's like having a foot in the door, sitting at the table. You've got to just put yourself out there. You've got to be part of it. Otherwise, you will miss out.
Yeah, completely. Yeah,
business-wise.
And you were going back to sort of the children that you want to get involved and these little pilot schemes. I do a bit of work with the On Course Foundation and the Golf Trust as well. So they get these machines that allow people to stand up and actually hit a golf ball if they're in a wheelchair. And is that something that could possibly be long term?
No, definitely. I mean, every project we do, as you can see, even if it's not intended to be, it ends up being long term.
Yeah.
But generally with our charity, everything's long term. I mean, I'll do it for a minimum of 3 years. That was sort of the rule with Blessings. Like, we wouldn't start funding a school unless we had 3 years worth of funding, because the worst thing is to start feeding in America, for example, start feeding kids in a school and then taking that program away.
So there
has to be some
longevity
kind of longevity
with it.
And some plan for that. So yeah, everything that we do is kind of with a view to it, kind of continuing as long as it's needed. I mean, in an ideal world, you'd fix some problems and then walk away.
Yes.
Which I think probably I went into that with that mentality with the Rose Ladies series, was I'll just come in as a temporary fix and then walk away. But then if things aren't fixed or there's a gap that still needs filling... Then,
and it's still there.
Yeah.
It's still there. The charity golf days, we see it throughout the sport. I mean, they raise a lot of money. I think there's like over 140,000 golf days in the US every year. So there's that symbiotic relationship, isn't there?
Yeah.
Golf has the ability to raise a lot of cash for really important needs. I mean, how many golf days do you run in total? It's the day here, isn't it? Nothing in America in terms of golf
days. I don't run the golf day in America now. My team over there do, but... Yeah.
The one that was here, though, last year, I know raised a lot of money.
Yeah.
But in terms of the Rose Ladies series, which is doing so well, I wanted to ask your opinion on the mixed golf events, you know, like the Scandi events where men and women play together.
Yeah.
How important do you think those events are in terms
of
exposure?
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. Yeah. I'd love to do something like that. But don't.
Yeah,
I'm not going to.
So you've got four minutes, 3 weeks on Tuesday. Can you write a plan?
No, I think they're brilliant.
Yeah, they're good, aren't they? Really sort of getting men and women playing in a professional event together.
Absolutely.
They've gone down so well.
And I've always thought that
making
the Olympics
headlines
could
as
be
well.
Something. You know, I've said for years, the Olympics, you know, would be really nice if you had a team event that was mixed, a mixed team event, you know, so your female and your male scores. But...
I just want to also highlight, you know, the charity work that you do. We mentioned before we came on camera, you just sort of flippantly said, oh yeah, we rebuilt a school. Where was the school that you rebuilt, which is a sort of a lifetime project for one person alone? But where was this school rebuilt?
So actually it was a home. It was a children's home.
Children's home.
In the Bahamas.
Okay.
When we were living in the Bahamas. So our 10-year big fundraiser for our charity in America. I always wanted to like change it up or do something special. And actually, our Orlando audience really liked sort of the routine of the same every year.
Right.
But after 10 years, they're like, come on, let's go and do something fun for, like, have a really big, extravagant 10-year celebration.
Absolutely.
Real big fundraiser.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we decided to host it at our home. We were living in the Bahamas by then. And it was just, for me, one of the most special things I've ever done. It was just, everything was perfect. I knew at the time, you know, when you have a moment, I just thought, I'm not sure life gets better. I think it might all be downhill from here.
You know,
I loved it so much. Yeah. Being a brilliant performer, blah, blah, blah.
Raised
tons of money, all just was brilliant. But what just happened a couple of months before was Hurricane Dorian, which had absolutely devastated the Bahamas. So then we had a real pickle, you know, morally, of we can't really take all this money away, but I know how much our American supporters like their money to stay in, you know, the local community.
Yeah.
That's really important to a lot, so you have to respect that. So we sort of ended up splitting it, and we had created like a Birdies for Blessings program that had been done for a long time, where every birdie Justin made, we made a donation, and then we had corporate sponsors match it. So that was great. And because it was our 10-year anniversary, we'd done a bit more of a push on that,
right,
publicly and within, you know, our team. And we ended up, I think, raising over $1 million from that, just from his birdies and people's donations, which was amazing.
Yeah.
So then what we ended up doing was that money stayed in America, but all the money that then, to fund all the programs, but all the money that we raised on the night in the auction and the live auction and the golf day in the Bahamas, that stayed locally in the Bahamas.
What was the name of the children's home that was rebuilt?
So Grand Bahama Children's Home was the name of the home that needed rebuilt. It was totally devastated, along with lots of other things. So that was a very long project.
Yeah.
It was really hard to get things rebuilt on the island. There was so much needed, etc. So, yeah, but that's
and it's there. It's rebuilt, though. It's there.
Yep, yeah, up and
amazing.
Running. Yeah, with lots more training for the staff and, you know, sort of as a fresh thing. So.
Fresh thing.
Yeah.
Now, you obviously do a lot of work with kids, getting kids into golf. Screens are the bane of all of our lives. We try and keep our children away from screens as much as possible. Why can golf help?
Well,
and what are you doing to try and help that? It's another project, is it?
It's just all part and parcel of trying to take golf to more children. One of the main selling points for me for golf for kids is the fact that it's fresh air, it's outside, it's etiquette, it's dealing with people not just from your own age group. That's the great thing about it. It's so inclusive, isn't it? You can play with your grandparent, you can play with girls versus boys. It's not really versus, it's more both of you, you know, against the golf course kind of thing. But it is the most inclusive sport. But it does have the reputation of being exclusive because it's sort of a moneyed, old worldy sort of...
It has that impression sometimes. Yeah.
And actually the reality, I think, is very different and so important now with, you know... I mean, screens right now, don't even get me started.
Yeah.
But...
It's so everything hard.
And there's great things about screens. Like, I'm not anti-AI, I'm not anti-social. I love it for me.
Mm.
But for children with their brains forming and, you know, opportunity costs of all the things they're not doing while they're being passively entertained, the comparison, the social media, the grooming, all the negativities, the screen addictions, the dopamine hits. So anything that gets them away from screens, too much screens, and so much of screens is necessary for schoolwork, which is... tricky.
It's changed so much,
it's tricky,
hasn't it?
But
it's
when if they're doing all their work on
clicking
screens,
and saying yes to a laptop that your child needs in secondary school, it's a hard, it feels slightly uncomfortable, doesn't it? You're thinking,
does.
Oh wow, we never used to have a laptop in senior schools, but because it's the system now.
It's now the system, but I don't know that it's a foolproof system. And I think that there's a lot more research coming out to say, you know, pen and paper shouldn't be obsolete. They're still learning-wise for things to resonate, writing things down, taking, you know, it's still a really important, handwriting's still an important skill. You still need to do a certain amount of pen and paper work. But
I think cognitively, when you don't write, I mean, I wrote a couple of letters the other day and thought, wow, that writing is really bad, actually.
Yeah,
need to keep practicing it. But
I mean,
they say it calms you down when you write.
Yeah.
We're basically rewiring our brains, though, aren't we, by watching screens?
Yeah. And if you're doing that all day long at school, and then all of your entertainment is on a screen in the evening.
Yeah.
I mean, and then we're wondering why we've got a massive spike in mental health issues. I mean,
there's,
even if it's not causative, even if it's not scientifically proven to be causative, every parent, every school teacher, everyone involved with kids knows that the correlation between the rise of social media and smartphone and the rise of mental health issues, it's not a coincidence. They are 100% you know, linked. So anyway, that said,
golf,
fresh air, golf, a little bit of exercise, walking.
No phone.
You never feel, I always say to my kids, not that they listen, you never feel worse after a walk.
Or a run, or any exercise.
I don't know if I go so far as running, walk, you always feel better after fresh air.
Yeah, you do.
And so just having
and being amongst the green as well.
Yeah.
That is scientifically proven to improve your mood,
so
being surrounded by green.
So many positives. But apart from the etiquette of it and calling shots on yourself and having to self-police and, you know, caps off when you go inside, etc. I mean,
No, I love that.
Positives.
I think we could start something. We could start another charity or another business together.
Let's
have a think, because I'm a real advocate for that as well. Yeah. I love it when my son goes out and plays and for 7 hours and you're thinking, oh, you've not even been near a screen and you're smiling and cheery and happy.
And they're happier for it. I think the main thing I feel about screens at the moment, not to bang on about it, but we need to have some adults in the room. You know, it is really hard to say no individually to our kids. We all are there. But us all just letting our kids have what everyone else has just because that's what everyone else has. We all know it's not the right thing, but we all do it anyway. It's not okay.
Yeah.
Governments aren't doing anything.
All my mates have got a phone. No. They're all on WhatsApp. Well, you're not. And but it's so, the pressure of it, it's so hard, isn't
it? It's really hard. And I mean,
because it becomes the norm to, you know, oh, let's have a phone at 30. No, let's have a phone at 10. What do you mean have a phone at 8?
Yeah.
It goes down, doesn't it?
And we're heading into senior school now at 30, you know, for my daughter. So I will have
really
to do
tricky.
Something this summer, but so far it is no phones, and she'll have to have some sort of phone, but it doesn't have to be a smartphone, right?
Nokia? Or other brands are available, but the ones where you just have
the flip phone from the 80s.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Yeah.
We are. When Justin and I started dating, I remember, like, like for one word, you know, for a letter, was you had to press it three times.
Oh, yes, I remember, yeah.
So our text messages were not that long.
No. I like you.
Yeah, and that took forever.
Shall we meet?
And then you'd wait for ages for a text to come back.
But that was really exciting.
Yeah, it was really exciting.
I did love my flip phone. I loved it, yeah. But I do remember my first ever mobile phone leaning out of the window at Newcastle University. It was a Motorola and it was a brick. Trying to get reception, thinking, I think I was 19 at the time, go, oh, hello. Just hear this, hello, like someone was in Australia. It was my mum in Manchester.
Oh.
Anyway, I digress massively. Really good to talk about that. Just in terms of golf as a sport and what it can do, why do you think as a sport, golf with all the people of the community can raise lots of money for charity? What is it about the sport?
I don't know. It has a real culture of philanthropy, as is my experience of it. I know when we went off to the PGA Tour, you know, it's really, it.
So much is done over there.
Everything's
isn't it?
Done for, you know, everyone's got their charitable.
For the military or for local schools or hospitals.
Yeah, so I feel like it's always been part of golf. And so therefore, you just find your niche, you find what's really, you know, moves your heart and you get involved in that way.
It definitely is a sport that gives back. It really does.
It really gives back. And then I think the people involved in golf, I mean, I suppose I haven't been so involved in so many other sports that I have as a really true comparison, but as a sport and the people are, I've met so many lovely, lovely people.
But I think also the golf days, because you highlighted before that anyone can play with anyone and the handicap system allows people that are beginners to play with experienced players and play off the same level. Because if you're getting two shots a hole, you can go out and bag those or get some extra shots.
Yeah.
So
and
it's
I think,
a leveler, isn't it?
And the fact that there's so much business done on the golf course is the biggest seller probably, because then a lot of people coming to a golf day can take the day off work because it's not taking a day off. It's relationship
working
building.
Working from home.
Well, they might, their company might have funded their four ball and they get to invite three clients, or they might be trying to do some business with someone and it's something that, you know, so it's a justifiable business expense and a justifiable time away from work, or I shouldn't say away from work, it's working on the golf course, which actually... helps you get deals done, helps you build relationships, helps to get you, helps to show character. And I think that's really
what's so key, showing character, because a golf game for A shows what kind of personality you are. If you start swearing, you know, people's personalities come out, don't they? But the 5 hours, if you're playing a round of 18 holes, it's a stationary sport, as in you're over the ball hitting it, but then you're walking between shots.
Which
so you've
is
got
very
that,
social. Yeah.
That business time, haven't you? If you if tennis is slightly different. You're not near the person,
and
are you?
And it's more combative. It's you against them.
It is, yeah. But you play in teams, don't you? Yeah. I think that's a really important point.
I think also with kids, for example, it's that walking alongside. They always say have the difficult conversations in a car, don't they? Or you know, when you're not facing each other. And golf, I think, is nice for... dare I say it, men, because there's a lot of interruption. I mean, you can have a conversation, but you don't really have the chance to get too intense because you're constantly interrupted with having to play, which I remember actually watching Justin at the Wentworth tournament years and years and years ago and some of my friends from school coming, and they found it really annoying that. It really interrupts our conversations.
Oh, really?
You know, we're having a good old chat watching and then we have to stand still and be quiet. Like, you know, so I felt like for a deep kind of intense girly chat is not so good. But for lots of other people, it's nice because you can have good chats and then you can wander off and then you can come back to it and you can want. So it's that longevity of the conversation that can spread over 4 or 5 hours and that have some separation. And I think it's just really conducive to good conversation, good relationship building, and potentially that's nothing but a good thing for business.
Really important. And your top tip is from this podcast is to say, have those tough conversations when you're in the car driving. Maybe with your children. I always find actually if I don't say anything in the car, they start talking.
Yeah.
Because I'm not... saying, how was your day? What are you doing? Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, mum, it's too much. But if you're facing forward...
It's less...
less invasive, isn't it?
Less invasive. Mm. And as long as they're not on screens, which is one of my rules, definitely no screens allowed in the car.
No.
Because I am not your chauffeur.
100%.
Do not think that you're getting to just entertain yourself passively and I'm like... That's not driving you around.
Really good point.
Yeah. But if you have a screen, you will not have any conversations.
I love that.
I will shut up about screens.
No, it's good. It's brilliant.
My poor children. Can you imagine how much they have to hear about it?
But their brains will be different because of you, which is amazing. They won't have as much screen time. Mm. Kate, you've been brill. What's the rest of the year? What is it? And what does it hold for you?
Lots of hopefully
travel.
A major.
Well,
a nice major.
I did say
trophy
to you,
would be good.
I'm thinking Justin for the Open Championship. I'm going to say it right now because my mate Dom Holland wrote a book called The Open Links, and he's written about Justin being Champion Golfer of the Year. So that would be amazing.
Let's just hope that's a premonition.
It
that would be lovely. I'll take that.
I'm doing
that.
It now. And your work, you're going to just be busy for the rest of the year in this room, probably.
Yep, just got to get the kids in the middle of Common Entrance and GCSEs this week. And then my daughter's got a new school next term.
Yeah.
And then Justin's
busy.
All his stuff. He has a busy summer. Hopefully a Ryder Cup would be very exciting. Hope. And then we've got a really hectic end of the year when his season slightly finishes. Then we have all of our charity events. We have the Horan and Rose. He's the ambassador and I'm a trustee for the Duke of Edinburgh Cup, which is a big golf tournament going on around the world, and then there's the finals. We have various other things. We have our junior series in Portugal in September. We have the Rose Ladies Open. So there's lots of end of season restful projects.
I now know why you've got lists everywhere. Lists.
Oh, if it doesn't go on the if you don't see me write it down, Di, know it's not happening.
It's not happening. No, same. It's gone. Yeah. Oh, what was that? Oh gosh. I hear you completely. It's been brilliant. I've loved chatting to you. We do have some Clubhouse curveball questions for you.
Right.
Yeah, this is Clubhouse curveball question. Who would be in your dream four-ball? We're going to say that you're playing.
This is assuming I can play.
Yes, which I know you can whack a ball. So who are the three that you'd like to have there?
Oh, I mean, it would be definitely Justin, his dad, who's passed away, and my mum, who's passed away. Actually, weirdly, my mum and dad had a golfing honeymoon in Ireland when
they
got married.
Did they?
I mean, I never knew that she played, but that's what they did. I don't know that she played, but that's what my dad dragged her off to.
That's amazing.
Yeah, So
it'd be
that would be lovely.
Yeah, your mum?
My mum, Justin's dad.
And Justin. Oh, that sounds like a great football. If you could travel anywhere in the world to play golf or to just anywhere in the world, where would you go to and why?
Okay, two places are top of my bucket list.
Okay.
I think they're both great for golf. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
India. Desperate to go to India. Always have been. And Japan. Never been.
Cherry blossom.
Yes, totally.
Cherry blossom.
I mean, obviously, was hoping to go to the Olympics. We had the whole, I mean, it was all booked up.
Oh,
had a whole family summer. And then COVID happened and he didn't make the team the next year. So gutted.
Yeah, India and Japan, two great locations. I've always wanted to go to Japan. I strangely watch lots of Japanese movies. And we have Japanese evenings at home.
Oh, with sushi.
Always made a homemade, roll them up.
Where's my invite?
I can give you some rolls, nori rolls if you'd like. Mm-hmm. It's all about me. It's not, it's all about you. If life depended on someone making a 10-foot putt, who would you choose to take it?
Oh, I'd take Justin.
Oh,
I mean,
definitely.
I'm so boringly loyal.
Oh, God, you'd have to.
But I'd only choose him.
Yeah.
In a really high pressure. Oh yeah, in my life. Hopefully that's pressure.
Oh, I might miss it.
Oh well, you win some, you lose some.
Oh, she's been okay.
It's been great, babe.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, I think under high pressure, Ryder Cups, winning putt. I mean,
it's mad, isn't
it? I always say whenever there's a big crowd, I'm like, oh, they hold it. There's enough people. He'll hold it. You know, he loves. He's a Leo the Lion, like he's a July.
Isn't he?
Yeah, you have to be a competitor, you have to love the crowds, you have to love the pressure. The more pressure, the better he plays, so yeah.
It is incredible where that energy comes from.
Yeah.
Because he just comes across, he's just so chilled and, you know, well, I see the chilled part, you probably don't.
His caddy and I have a support group amongst ourselves.
I can imagine. I can only imagine. Oh, that's a great answer. I'm glad that you stayed loyal. Great stuff. Thank you. Kate Rose, you're awesome. Brilliant. Awesome. Thank you so much for listening. Do not forget to check us out on your favourite podcast provider. We will be back soon with our next special guest. This is Why Golf, presented by Skyscanner.